So I thought I'd start just by introducing myself a little bit, just so you know where I'm coming from, I guess, and why I'm talking about this sort of stuff. So I am an educational and developmental psychologist and have been doing this for 14 years now. So quite a little while. It always shocks me when I add up how many years I've been working. So an educational and developmental psychologist, basically just what that means is that we're very interested, trained in work with growth, development, and learning across the lifespan. And we're also really interested in context. So we don't look at people in a vacuum by themselves. We're really interested in their environment. So, you know, what's their family like? What's their school like? What's their daycare center like? What's work like for adults? So we're getting a really broad idea of all of the things that might be impacting on someone's mental health and well-being, which is really important. So a big part of that, obviously, is our families of origins. These are really formative places for how we develop and our values and core beliefs and things like that. So a lot of the work that I do is with parents. They do a lot of parenting stuff, which is great. So I'm in private practice currently. I did work at the Cerebral Palsy League for a couple of years, working with kids and young people with CP and their families. Now that I'm in private practice, probably the most clients I see are children and young people with developmental disabilities, so things like autism, ADHD, stuff like that. So I do a lot of work in that space, which I really love. And in fact, my eldest has just been diagnosed autistic, so which has really been a big process, but really exciting, I guess, yeah, for him to understand how he's wired and all that sort of stuff, which is great. I do work across the lifespan though as well, so I do have adult clients as well as children and young people, so I've got sort of a bit of a broad experience. And as well as sort of clinical work, I also do a lot of assessments, so which is all looking at sort of gathering information to determine things like, you know, is there a diagnosis at play here? Or how, you know, kids' brains work, how they learn, all of that sort of stuff too. I'm also a supervisor and author. So I supervise other psychologists that are coming through different pathways of how to get to the end, I suppose. So I have a number of those that I work with. And I work on counselling techs with my honours thesis supervisor back in the day. So she invited me to come on board with that. And we're still doing that work. And I'm also a student and a lecturer. I was at Melion College, so I actually just submitted my master's project last month and I passed, yay! So technically I now have a master's of ministry in addition to the psychology that I've been doing. So, and a lot of, I guess, the study that I was doing at Melion, and as I was lecturing, in pastoral care skills, and a lot of that process over the last, it was before my eldest was born, so like 12 years now I've been at Melion, which is a long time studying. But a lot of that was bringing together my psychology and the theology. So trying to understand how my faith fits into what I do in my job, which is kind of in secular private practice. So I can't sort of talk about Christ in my work, but I've done a lot of kind of work towards making sure I'm practicing in a way that fits with my worldview, fits with my faith. So that's been a big long sort of process doing that. And I'm also a parent. So I have two human children and three fur babies. So I have a seven-year-old today. He's turning seven, which is pretty exciting. So, and my eldest will be 11 in a week's time, so next Friday, which is pretty exciting. So when we're looking at under sixes, it's like I've survived. I'm the survivor. We've made it through, which is pretty exciting. Yes, and we have two beautiful cats and a dog at home too. So I've got a Russian blue, a Russian black as my two gorgeous cats, and we've got a German shorthead pointer who has lots of energy and is a bit kind of intense, but that's okay. Yeah, so I guess what I'm talking about today is drawing sort of on all of those factors in the various sort of experiences. So I have had a lot of opportunity to do a lot of training and thinking about parenting, but I've also applied it. So the stuff I'm talking about today is not just stuff like I've thought about and told people to do, you know, it's stuff that I'm actually applying myself and sort of what I'm going to say aiming for, because I'm human and I fall short and it never sort of works out the way I plan. In fact, I often have a therapist in my head going, how you're responding is not helpful. You should be doing X, Y, Z. But yes, I'm human. I get caught up in the emotion and things as well. And I will actually be sharing some of those times where I've fallen short, just as an illustration to some of the things that we'll be talking about today. Because I think that's important to know. I'm not up here as someone who's got it all together and is doing it perfectly. I'm here in the trenches with you guys as well. Beautiful. Any questions about all of that information about me and who I am? Oh, good. Beautiful. Just going to... So the first thing I wanted to kind of touch base on before we really get into things is this, parent guilt. So I don't know about you, but when I had kids, I was blown away by the parent guilt. Is anyone in a similar sort of situation? I just found myself thinking all the time, like, oh, I'm just doing it wrong. I failed them again. They're going to be in therapy for the rest of their lives because of the way I'm parenting. You know, so I just felt like this intense amount of parent guilt pretty much all of the time. And that really took me off guard. I wasn't prepared for that. I feel like it wasn't something that was much, I heard much about or before having kids. It really kind of took me by surprise. But I think when we come to something like this, where we are talking about parenting, I think it's important to call out that parent guilt's probably going to show up at some point in time for most of us when we're hearing information about parenting. So rather than sort of ignoring that or letting it block, you know, sort of what we're hearing today, I thought we'd try kind of calling it out a little bit. So this is an ACT approach, or acceptance and commitment therapy. And basically that's all about calling the emotion out and talking back to it a little bit. So if parent guilt comes up for you today, I want you to have a go at this in your head. Just call it out a little bit. So like, hey, parent guilt, I see you there. And I know you're concerned about my kids. I know you want what's best for them. But that's why I'm here. You know, I've got this. It's okay. So I think by calling that parent guilt out and talking back a little bit, we can stop it from sort of getting in the way of picking up new information and moving forward. The other thing I wanted to talk about before we get stuck in is this idea of you choose. So I like to ask questions. I like to get people involved. However, when I'm attending something and the speaker says that, I start panicking because I'm like, I don't want to talk to no strangers. You know, I don't want to, you know, talk out in front. So please don't feel like when I'm asking questions that you have to engage. But if you want to, it is most welcome. Does that kind of make sense? So you interact on the level that you feel comfortable with. And I find this is really important. So hopefully that puts people at ease that aren't big sharers or talkers. But please, if you do want to contribute, please do that. If you have any questions as we're going through, I'm very happy to hear those as we go through. So just kind of raise your hand or grab my attention and we can address those questions as we move through. Cool. All good? I'm speaking way too fast, yeah? Maybe? Let's kind of slow down. My brain whizzes. So I called this Fearfully and Wonderfully Made, and it is based on Psalm 139:14. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. And this is something, when I was preparing this talk, this first came to mind because it's something in my job that I actually really love about my job. So I get the opportunity to learn and really deep dive into humans. What makes us tick? How we're kind of wired? What's going on for us? And all the time, it's just like this constant sort of like awe that I get. In terms of how God has created us, like, it's just amazing. We are so complex and complicated and intricate, and it just fascinates me. I just think it's amazing. So when I was thinking about particularly talking about little people, I thought this is a nice way to kind of ground what we'll be talking about today. And we're going to go into a little bit of a deep dive into nervous system development. So, and see how God, I guess, has wired us, as particularly as little people, but generally as humans. So our nervous systems is basically like an information highway in our bodies. So basically, information is always zooming between our bodies and our brains constantly, all the time, sending messages. And that's the job of the nervous system. So it gathers information about what's going on around us, about what's happening inside us, and it's feeding all of that up to the brain, all these messages, constant messages about what's happening. And the brain then responds and sends messages back out, telling the body what to do. How do I react to this? What do I need to do? So really important. It basically keeps us doing all the things that we're doing, which is really cool. So we're going to focus on the central nervous system, which is just our brains and our spinal cords. But we're particularly going to focus on our brains, so what's happening in little people's brains, and on the autonomic nervous system. So autonomic is just, it's pretty much automatic, right? So when you think of cars, a manual car, obviously we're doing all the work, right? We're changing the gears, we're doing the clutch. I don't actually know because I don't drive a manual, but this is what I hear. Whereas you're an automatic car, right? All of that's happening kind of behind the scenes, yeah? So same outcome, we're still driving, the car's still driving, but in an automatic, there's a lot happening where we can't see what's not involved. And that's kind of how our autonomic nervous system works. So it's kind of looking after the functioning of our body, of our system, but we're not kind of really aware that all of that's going on. But it's responsible for us being in the world and engaging and things like that. So we're gonna have a little bit of a closer look at those two things. So this little diagram, it's a little worksheet from the Bringing Up Great Kids program. So if you're interested, I love this program. I'm not getting a commission or anything for this, just to be clear. This is a beaut little program that I just really love. So I've done some training in this program. It's developed by the Australian Childhood Foundation. And their website there, if you want to Google that, it's got a heap of resources on it, both paid but also free resources. And the program itself, they'll have a list of where you can access that if you're interested. And many people offer it for free or at low cost. So it's a great little program, really focused on understanding our kids, what's going on for them, but also supporting us to reflect as parents. How am I going with that? You know, am I happy with how I'm parenting? Is there things I need to shift or change? So it's a really great little program in terms of that. I really, really like it. So this is one of the worksheets or one of the things that they look at, and it's just focused on what happens as our brains develop. And this is really important to understand because basically it means we're aligned or we understand where our kids are at biologically, like what they can actually do based on their brain, like where their brain is at. Does that kind of make sense? So we're not sort of putting expectations that are actually above biologically what they can do. So this is where understanding what's happening in the brain is really important. So when we're born, basically all that's kind of online, all that's functioning, is what's called the brain stem. So that orange, it's orange bit down here. So this is where the spinal cord joins to the brain. So it's right, sort of right down. So if you hold the back of your neck, you're pretty much holding your brain stem. It's quite a calming thing to do, actually, if anyone wants to give it a go. So that's just basically all our basic survival functions, right? So it's things like heart rate, breathing, temperature control, reflexes. So when you think of a newborn infant, it's pretty much what's happening, right? So everything's kind of ticking over. We don't have much engagement with the world. Our movements are kind of a bit random. So it's all just those basic survival functions. But we've got the reflexes we need to stay alive. So the one, you know, if you touch a newborn's cheek and they'll open and move to the side. So we've got that reflex for feeding, for example, and things like that. So there's all these little reflexes that are happening, but not much else when we're first born. The second thing to come online is our cerebellum, this dark red bit here. And it's pretty much the motor center. So you know how kids then, the next step is kind of we start to coordinate movements. We start to hold our heads up, you know, when we're on our tummies. We start to roll, we start to sit, we start to pull ourselves up, we start to walk. So all of this is that cerebellum coming online and starting to develop. So it's the motor center that happens next. And that's literally just kind of at the back of our skulls down here, kind of sits just above our brainstem. The next part that comes online is our limbic system or the emotional center. So that's that yellow one in the middle. Now this is kind of right on top of our brainstems, really deep inside our brain, sort of right in the middle. And this is a super important part of the brain. It's really, really important. Number one priority is to keep us safe. So that's where it's coming from. So it's taking all of the information from our senses, so what we're hearing and seeing and touching and smelling and tasting, and it all feeds through this limbic system, the emotional brain. And then there's a part in that brain called the amygdala, which is then making decisions about what to do with the information. So all this is happening subconsciously. We're not aware that this is happening. And then the amygdala responds. So if there's a threat, so when we're really little, a threat is often detachment from our caregivers. Yeah, if our caregiver's not there to look after us, we're in trouble. That's a danger thing. So the amygdala would fire off and we'd get a response, which usually in little people is crying. Yeah, so that's alerting the caregiver. Oh, yep, I need to respond. I need to be in touch with my little person. Awesome. So with under sixes, this is kind of where we're sitting. We're in the emotional brain, which makes sense, right? Like when we think of little people and toddlers, it's a very emotional time, yeah? And they're very like, whew, up and down all of the time. I was blown away by that, like the roller coaster of emotions. Like you're really upset and then now you're happy and like what happened? Like I'm still back here at the, you know, really distressed point and you're kind of over here kind of, whoa. And that's what it's like. It's very in the moment. It's very responsive to what's going on and the impacts around us. So this is why little people, under sixes, toddlers, how they present, you know, they're very in the moment, very emotional, very sort of swapping all over the place. That's because the last part of the brain to develop, the cortex, so that orange part, which basically is the whole outer covering, the, you know, the squiggly parts of our brains that you see often that we know the brain of. So this is the cortex, last to develop, and particularly the frontal lobes. So there's a part of our cortex right at the front here, and this is kind of the reasoning, judging, you know, language problem solving kind of part of the brain. So this doesn't start to come online until at least six. So before six, we don't have much problem solving, reasoning, language ability at all. We're starting to learn these things, but really not much development has happened in those frontal lobes. So from six on, they do start to develop. Not fully developed until early 20s in females, late 20s in males. So it takes a long time for these frontal lobes to develop and for us to have those reasoning, problem-solving skills. They also go through a major redevelopment in adolescence, drop to about 10% capacity. That makes sense, right? Because when we think about adolescent behavior, lots of risk-taking, lots of big emotions, it's because the frontal lobes are kind of really not working properly during that time. The other thing frontal lobes do is it's kind of like the brake system of our brains. So if we have an emotion come up, if we have an impulse come up, the frontal lobes are the things that are responsible for going, oh, that's not okay, or whoop, now is not quite the right time for me to, you know, fly into a rage or, you know, start sobbing uncontrollably. These are the frontal lobes, that's what the frontal lobes does. So when we're under six, we don't have that capacity. We can't just switch off, you know, or make a choice to switch off, if that makes sense. So that's something that develops through childhood, adolescence, and then into adulthood is where we start to be able to do that consistently. I read some, this is another one of the things that I was learning. I'm like, oh, I like that a lot. Because I think as parents of particularly under sixes, and I know I feel like this all the time, we get really distressed that maybe we're perhaps parenting a psychopath. You know, I don't know if you've had that, but my second born, he's like, wow, he's an intense little bundle of joy. But oftentimes I'd look at him and go, oh my goodness, like, what are you even? But it's not that he's a horrid little person. You know, obviously there's sin there and all of that sort of stuff, but it's more about that impulse control. Yeah, he doesn't have the ability to actually stop the impulses yet. He doesn't have that part of the brain. So that's really important to know, you know, like we're dealing with little people who are really run by emotions and it's very reactive. Awesome. Any questions? That was a lot of like information that I just totally dumped on you then. Are we all with me? Okay. Yeah. Excellent.
Do you think that there is any way, I know that like that's a baseline theoretical process, is there any way that we can support, not faster, we don't want our children to develop faster necessarily, but for them to learn some of those things?
That's kind of what we'll be talking about next. Yes, I have a little application section, but yes, we'll get there. That's a good question. And this is actually like, yeah, based on like brain research proper, this is what is actually happening in the kids' brains. So, you're right, it's not something we can actually make happen faster. It's just a natural development process, and it's how God has made us, you know, to naturally develop, which is pretty cool. So the brain does work with our autonomic nervous system that I mentioned before. So this, these terms or these words come from a book called Brain Body Parenting by Dr. Mona Delahook. Again, I'm not getting commission or anything for this, I just really like her book. And she is just a lovely person. So she's a clinical psychologist in the States. She's got a website there with lots more information, but yeah. And I like her book because, again, it links kind of what we know is happening for young people with how we can respond as parents. So she talks about the autonomic nervous system working together with the brain to keep us safe. So each of these pathways are what we would call adaptive pathways. And what we mean by that is it's responding to what's happening to keep ourselves safe. So, and again, it's this unconscious kind of process that is happening. So when we're in the green pathway, we're feeling safe and connected. So that means we're kind of in a space where we can engage with people, we can have conversations, we can learn new information, we can kind of push ourselves, go a little bit further, maybe learn something new. So when our kids are in this green pathway, in that safe and connected pathway, that's when we can really start to, you know, maybe ask a demand of them or, you know, teach a new skill or things like that, because they're open and ready. Their brains are like in a place and their nervous systems are in a place where they can learn. So what would we look out for in terms of how would we know that our kids are in a green pathway? What are some things that might alert us to that? So we're feeling safe, connected, we're engaging. What would that look like?
Emotions are settled.
So mood, definitely. So kind of in a little happy place. I might be smiling, laughing. Yeah. Anything else that we might look out for?
They can be curious.
Curious, beautiful. Yeah. So they're interested in the world. Yeah. They want to engage and connect. Perfect. Yeah. Anything else? How might their energy levels be? They'd be like, tired? Really, 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 really excited? Probably not, yeah. They'd probably just, you know, alert, but not overly excited or, you know, sleepy or tired. So the red pathway happens, like I was talking about before, when that amygdala has sort of noticed a threat. We move into the red pathway. And this puts our body in a space where it's ready to protect itself. Okay, so it's like the threat and protect kind of pathway. So often in this pathway, we are more energized because we're getting ready to either protect ourselves, a fight or flight sort of space, yeah? So we're either getting ready to run away from whatever the threat is or face the threat, you know, take the threat on. So what are some, and okay, so when we're in this, what frontal lobes we have is kind of completely cut off. So even as adults, when we go into fight or flight, we don't have access to those frontal lobes. It kind of shuts them down. Because stopping and thinking about something could be fatal, yeah? Like there's a big bear in the forest or something. If we're stopping to think about all the best options, it's too late. So we want quick responses when we're in that threat mode. So we're not really thinking, problem solving, talking. We're in sort of that heightened kind of state. So what might be some things that you might see when your kid's in that red pathway? What might you look out for? Have a massive list for my second child. I feel like he's in the red pathway a lot. Lots going on. What might we look out for?
Yelling.
Yelling, yes, definitely.
Irrational.
Irrational, yes. Throwing things, perfect, yep. Hitting, yep. Yeah, definitely. So lots of big behavior, yeah? Probably seeing a child that's like angry or really, really upset or really scared. So lots of big, big active emotions. Probably running a bit fast, yeah? Lots of energy and a lot of those external kind of, you know, that fight mode, which is, it's like my second child. Like he's always in the red pathway, I feel. I'm like, far out. Everything's a threat. When there is a sustained threat, so when we're under constant stress, that's when we fall into the blue pathway, which is the overwhelm and withdrawal. So that's when our bodies are like, whoa, this is just way too much. Fight and flight's not going to cut it. So we move into freeze, which is kind of like shutdown mode. And again, this is like, I think if you've ever seen animals do this, you know, when they can't escape the predator, they just play dead. So that's an example of freeze. So it's when the fight or flight's not working. We go into this kind of freeze state on the blue. So what would we sort of notice here? And sometimes this is an interesting one because sometimes the blue pathway can be mistaken for the green. We get those confused a little bit. But I think a key difference is in the blue pathway, we don't have that interaction or engagement. So what might you look like, what might you see in the blue pathway then? What kind of energy levels would we expect if we're going down into freeze?
Flat.
Yeah, so pretty flat. We might be sleepy or tired. We're probably a little bit glazed. You know how kids get that kind of glazed look? It's like they're not really there. You know, that sort of, oh, we're off, kind of off with the fairies. Yeah, yeah, so really slow movements, really kind of not really listening, not really hearing. So again, like not in the space to kind of connect or learn. Yeah.
Maybe more inclined to resist affection.
Sometimes, yeah, for some kids, yeah, because they're not in that connect space. Yeah, they're not in a space where they're ready to connect, so they could flip back into that. Yeah, yep, yep. Yep, so they withdraw, that's it. They move away from connection. Yeah, and again, my youngest is the perfect example. He will like, yep, yeah. Awesome. I'm just looking at the time. So what does this mean? Oh, good, we'll move into that. I thought I had some others in there, but no, this is good. So I guess knowing this about where our little under six are, what does that mean? So we're going to talk about action over words, connection over consequence, and pause and observe. Now, I was very specifically chose over here. I didn't choose not or instead of. Does that make sense? So it's not that we never use words. It's really important for kids to hear a lot of language so that their language develops. And similar with consequences. There are a time and place for that. But when we're looking at under sixes, action and connection will give you more bang for your buck, all right, than words or consequences, particularly when we're in that red or a blue pathway where those that language and that kind of cognition is gone. So when we're looking at actions over words, that reasoning and judgment last to develop, not really there. So they don't really have the capacity for verbal reasoning, like the biology to verbal reason is not there. So sitting down and kind of trying to rationalize it. Have you ever tried to rationalize with an under six? Like, oh, it's tough, right? Like it just, they don't have the biology for it. So sitting down and pointing out, you know, like it's not, you know, talking them through or giving them lots of options, you know, it's not going to hit as well as when they're older and they've got a bit more cortex to kind of work with. And remember, they're living from that emotional center, yeah? So it's all in the moment, it's all emotional. And I notice this a lot, like it can be really frustrating, right? Because your kid, I don't know if your kids do this, but all the time, like, can I have a cup of water? I'm like, yeah, no worries. I go and get a cup of water, I come back, I don't want water. And you're just like, what? But you're like, literally just ask. And so one thing I find useful is just saying, okay, you felt like a cup of water there. Now you don't feel like a cup of water. So it kind of takes the thinking rationale out, if that makes sense. So it is very much based on that, what I feel like in the moment. So rational talking, problem solving, it's not really where they're at. There's also a language disconnect when we're emotional. So often what language they do have access to isn't there. They don't have kind of access to that. So you'll notice a lot of kids, for example, go non-speaking when they're very emotional. Like there's just, they can't get the words out. They are, however, very responsive to modeling when we're under six. And I think this is really clear, like when we watch kids play under sixes, a lot of what they do is role play, yeah? Pretending they're in the kitchen, pretending they're cleaning, pretending they're driving, pretending they're modeling the adults in their life. So they're really super responsive to modeling when they're little. So overall, what that means is that the things that we do and model and action are gonna have more weight than the things that we say when we're sort of parenting under sixes, which is really important to remember. So as an example of that, there was one time when my little person, my youngest, it's always about my youngest, poor child, he's like the scapegoat of our family, I feel, we've got to shift that. But he was very upset about something, I don't even remember what it was, and me being me, I talk a lot, so often my first go-to is talking and problem solving, let's intellectualize this. And of course that wasn't working at all because his little brain was not in the space to hear any language, and so he just kept on being extremely distressed. And finally it clicked, like this isn't working, you know, this is not gonna be helpful. So I just stopped and I started breathing. So I started slowing my breath down and I started rocking. I really like to rock. And just as I started to do that, as I started to model regulation, I could see out of the corner of my eye my little person just starting to come down. You know, words weren't cutting it. That wasn't going in. But as soon as I started to model, to act, his little system started to calm as well. And this is the beautiful process of co-regulation. So our nervous systems were actually connecting and talking to one another. It's so cool how God has done this. I think it's just incredible. You see it in animals all the time. Animals are much more connected to this process. Again, we get into our thinking brains and kind of not notice it. But it's this beautiful way that we can actually model and co-regulate with our kids when they're really, really heightened. It's so hard at times. And I do not get it right all the time. But when I do have the presence of mind, it works wonders to just bring the whole system down. And then you could see where he started to move back into the green pathway, because what he did was he actually came to me for a hug. So it was like we're moving back into that. We're going from the red pathway back into that green pathway, and he was ready to connect again, which is really beautiful. Connection over consequences. So again, cortex, that reasoning and judgment's not there. We don't actually have the biology to link what we do to the consequence yet. All right, this will develop over time, but when we're under six, that's not what we're learning from the action consequence link. Like it just under sixes, that's the brain's not there. The part of the brain that does that is not there. And again, because it's because we're in that really emotional space and we're in the moment, we've forgotten what's happened, you know, like 5 minutes ago, that means nothing to us. We're in this space now and we're thinking. And I think this is another thing I often ask, you know, how was your day today? And they could have had the best day, but if something terrible has just happened and they're super upset, it was awful. It was the worst day ever. We just had this morning with my seven-year-old. His brother, I think, stopped playing a game with him and he's like, worst birthday ever, you know, and he's really, really intense. He'd just gotten this awesome present that he loved and, you know, but no, in that moment, yeah, it's the moment. So often they just can't make that link between action and consequence. They are, however, very responsive to a felt sense back into that emotional brain through connection. So again, another little example from my now seven-year-old. So again, I can't remember what happened, but again, he was really upset. And again, I was trying to do the words. Of course, this is not gonna work. When are you gonna learn? So I was trying to explain myself as what was going on. And he, which really triggered me, was going blah, blah, blah back in my face. And, oh, that so made me angry. Like it was so triggering. So I'm like, I'm not being heard. You're not listening. So I had all this stuff going on to me. He started trying to explain what was going on for him, and I am very embarrassed by this. I went blah, blah, blah back in my kid's face. And of course, he just burst into tears, and it was horrible. You know, no one is learning anything from that little process there. So the whole consequence of I'll do back to you what you've just done to me, pointless, you know, like there was nothing learnt from that except that everybody was upset and it was horrible. But again, after a little time, we all calmed down. And what we did then is I owned my stuff. So I modeled how to reconnect when things fall apart. So I said, look, I'm so sorry. I really was not a good boss of my emotions right then. I got really angry and I was not the boss at all. And I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. And over time, he now, after lots and lots of modeling of this, after lots of modeling of reconnecting, he now will do this. So when there's been a big blowout, he, of his own free will, decides to come and reconnect and he apologizes, which is such a beautiful thing, right? How much more does it mean when this is what they've decided to do? You know, they haven't been told, it's not, you know, a forced apology. This is, I know in my heart that I've disconnected from mum and I don't like how that feels. But my mum showed me what to do. I know that I come and say sorry and we have a hug and we can move on again and we're reconnected. So the last thing is pause and observe. This can be really, really hard as a parent. I, again, not great at this all of the time. But when I do it, it's so useful. And often we respond very reactively as parents. You know, there's so much going on. I feel like I spend all of my life with my kids, both overwhelmed and frustrated and exhausted. So this is really hard. Often we get just into these moments where we're just reactive all the time. React, 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 react. If we can just stop, take a bit of a breath, have a bit of a pause in the moment, and kind of step back and just observe what's going on. So let's see what's going on. So that's, we think of behavior kind of as an iceberg, right? So what we can see is that like tip of the iceberg above the waterline. Yep. So that's the behavior that we're seeing. So we can stop and observe, where are we at the moment? Are we in the green pathway, red pathway, blue pathway? Ah, okay. We're really intense, we're distressed, there's a lot going on, we're red. What might be going on? What has triggered the red pathway? And this is where we go under the waterline. And so under the water, you know, the iceberg, you got a little bit at the top, there's a whole heap of stuff happening underneath the waterline there. And so when I'm observing, like we can see, we can start to make guesses about what might be going on. Are we hangry? That happens for me a lot. Are we exhausted? You know, are we overwhelmed? Is there too much has happened? I'm just, whoa, it's just too much. Has the brother done something? Has he been doing the poking, you know, that set him off or whatever? So we start to kind of think about what might have set off. So what's sort of under the waterline. And when we do that, we can respond then not reactive, but with let's address what's actually sort of running the behavior. Does that sort of make sense? So we're more interested in why the behavior is occurring. And if we respond to why it's occurring, we'll be much more effective in our parenting responses than if we're just reacting to the behavior above the waterline. I really struggle with this one though. Like, it is hard to do. So just recently we went to see the Lego dinosaur exhibit at the Queensland Museum, which is really super cool. We went in the holidays. So we rock up. Soon after, there's this whole busload of kids come through. So it must have been on like a vacation care or something like that. So when we first arrived, everything was kind of cool. We're chilled. There's not many people. We're doing the activities. We're in that green pathway. It was awesome. And then this big bunch of kids come through. And so then this sort of, you know, there's more kids around. There's more pressure. I've got this pressure from my own family of origin about when we go out, we have to have an awesome time and everyone's happy all the time. So like my own stuff was running through there. And I wasn't paying attention. I wasn't pausing and observing to where my kids were at. And so the youngest again, oh God. He, next minute, I feel this shot. He had like taken the pencil we were using to fill out the books and like whacked it into my leg. And I'm just like, that flicked me off. I'm like, what a horrid thing to do. Like, how dare you? But it was because I wasn't paying attention to where he was at. You know, he was sitting there getting more and more dysregulated because of what was going on around him. But because I was so caught up in what I was doing and I wasn't pausing and observing and checking in, this is the only way he could get my attention. So it was his way of like, Mom, like I'm not coping here. So if I had, we actually went back and we redid it again and we were much more successful this time around because I'd learnt from that and we did it through again and this time, you know, we were prepared and we knew what to do. We knew. But if I had have done the pause and observe, I wouldn't have got the pencil in the leg. So, and because I'm the frontal lobes in the situation. You know, I'm the one with the fully functioning frontal lobes. I'm the one with the impulse control and the emotional control. Beautiful. Sorry, I feel like I'm racing. Any questions already after all of that? Any reflections on your own interactions with little people?
Must be hard with raising up children at all.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So when there's trauma involved, we're in the red pathway and the blue pathway a lot. Yeah, absolutely. So that gets really tricky.
I might have a question.
Yeah.
Does the Bible have anything to say with under 6-year-olds?
Oh, this is the where I'm going next. So awesome. Is this even biblical? So I think this is important. What I've done is looked at a few like overarching values in the Bible and like that, you know, what the Bible teaches and how we're to live, how Jesus shows us to live and how this kind of associates with how we're parenting those under sixes. Because I think I wanted to address this because I think this comes up a lot, right? This whole spare the rod, spoil the child is a really common thing we throw around. It is kind of linked to some proverbs in the Bible, but that term is actually not biblical. So it's actually from a different source. It's not actually in the Bible, but there are verses that kind of link to that concept. So there's some examples, Proverbs 13:24, whoever spares the rod hates their children, but the one who loves their children is careful to discipline them. And Proverbs 22:15, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far away. Sorry, like, oh. So I thought a lot about this and going through, I guess, Bible college has been really useful in this process of understanding what these verses are saying in terms of biblical interpretation and how we look at it. And I've done sort of some reading around this as well. And what happens with this, I think these two verses are very, very, very much read in the context of our Western culture. So in our Western culture, we're very strong on retributive justice, right? People get their just desserts. If you're guilty, there's a consequence. So that's our whole justice system is based on this. Often our parenting for a very long time has been based on this. So there must be consequences. You do the wrong thing, there's a consequence. You do the right thing, there's a reward. So this is often how, like, the lens that we're reading these verses through. However, when we have a look at the word rod, in other contexts of the Bible, we actually get a very different sort of spin on these verses. So when we read, so the people of the time when these proverbs were written, how they read it would have been very different to how we read it from our Western viewpoint. So one very famous example, of course, is Psalm 23:4. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Not bash me over the head, not hit me back into line. They comfort me. So when we read those Proverbs verses, it's not actually a rod, you know, of discipline as we often think. It's a rod of a shepherd, a star, a guidance, a disciple, you know. So we're guiding, we're encouraging, we're nurturing, we're giving our kids what they need. We're not whacking them over the head when they do the wrong thing or when they slip. So when we think about how rod is used in the Bible and we read those verses, it's actually looking more about if we don't, you know, if we're not involved in our kids' life, if we don't care what they do, if we just let them run, do whatever they like, of course they're going to end up spoiled, yeah? Yeah. Whereas if we're attentive, if we're like a shepherd taking care of our sheep, we're guiding them to the things they need, that's when. So this is kind of, and I feel like this links very beautifully into understanding, you know, how our little ones are wired. Because in understanding where they're at, we can better disciple them, we can better guide them and nurture them and give them what they need. So the other thing I think is very, very pertinent is when we're talking about connection over consequences, is the Bible is a book about relationship. That's at its core, that's what it is. It's a book about relationship. And we see in Genesis 1 and 2, it's exactly why God made us. You know, God made us for a relationship with himself, with others, with nature, and with ourselves as well. Like, it's all about these relationships. And so when we're looking at parenting, that should be our main sort of focus, is this relationship, it's connection that's most important to God. And of course, the whole thing of when sin came into the world, all of those relationships were broken, were fallen. They're not working as God wanted. But that's the beauty of the Bible, right? The beauty of the Bible is the way that God's working to bring that all right again, to fix connection, to fix the relationship of humans with God and with others and with nature and with themselves. So as parents, that's kind of like our role too, right? Like, it's all about bringing our kids up in a way that kind of helps to limit the impact of the fall on our relationships. So that the connection, the relationship, is kind of what we're called to as parents, to model a different way of being in the world, to model a different way compared to the fallenness. And thank goodness we've got Christ in us to help with that, because it's hard work. The final thing I thought about was Jesus is very concerned about our hearts and not just our outward behavior. Yeah? So I kind of feel like if God was here, he'd be more about this connection, connecting with our hearts and our values and our beliefs, rather than just worried about what we do. And I think this is really, really, really clear when we look at the Pharisees. So he, of all of the people Jesus interacted with, like, he was the harshest on the Pharisees, right? He just went for, really, it was really intense. This is just one example in Matthew 23. So it says, "Woe to you, teachers of the law and Pharisees, you hypocrites! You're like whitewashed tombs, which look beautiful on the outside, but on the inside are full of the bones of the dead and everything unclean. In the same way, on the outside you appear to people as righteous, but on the inside you're full of hypocrisy and wickedness." So, you know, so we can be, you know, doing the consequences and the rewards and building up this nice facade of a well-behaved kid, but it's actually not hitting their hearts. It's actually not changing their values and morals and beliefs and Christ-likeness. And this is what Jesus is interested in. He wants our hearts. He wants our willingness. He wants us to choose to follow him and do live like how he wants. He doesn't want a facade. It's not what he's interested in. He wants our hearts. And so the things that we've talked about today in terms of parenting, that's where they're targeting. They're targeting our kids' hearts. They're modeling and showing a different way of being in relationship, a way that is Christ-like. You know, and that's how we can build those hearts that then our kids choose. Just like my son now chooses to say sorry. It's not because he's been told to, it's not a facade, it's like he doesn't mean it, it's his choice, you know, and that's been through that process of modeling and connection. It's not because I've told him to or I put consequences in place when he doesn't, you know, it's come through that process. And it's a long process, it's a much longer process than consequences, etc., but it hits deeper and lasts longer. Beautiful. Sorry, that is literally all I had to say. It was less interactive than I wanted it to be. I apologize. I had way too much to go through. But any questions? Yes, hello.
So I'm understanding very much about, like, I can definitely see the overwhelmed, the anger,
yep,
or whatever, like, definitely seeing the reasons for why they might be acting this way.
Yep.
But especially what about when they're in that green zone, you're interacting, you're having a good relationship.
Yep.
And then when they look at you and they do something, you're saying you still don't implement
the consequence? Well, do you remember back then, connection over consequence? So not connection, it wasn't connection, not consequences ever. It's more about we're preferencing the connection. That's where the learning happens. That's where we're touching their hearts. But sometimes, yeah.
And yeah. In the red zone, then, like, I understand how to approach helping them, but still...
Yeah, exactly. So there's still boundaries. So what I'm, it's not about there's no boundaries at all. So basically most of the time my son is in the red pathways because I've said no to something.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's still these clear boundaries. So what I do in that moment is I'm connected, I'm available, I'm regulating myself, but I'm not giving in. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying, oh, no worries, you go have that chocolate, that's all fine. You know, that's not what it's about, but it's saying, I get it. This is really upsetting for you. I know you really want the chocolate, but that's not okay for you right now. So it's about holding that boundary, but also like making sure we're doing it within a connected space. Does that help a little bit? Yeah. Yeah. So there's definitely times, like as parents, that's our role as well, right? Like we've lived the life. We're much older than our six-year-old or, you know, two-year-old or whatever. Yeah, we know chocolate's not good for you for breakfast. So that's what we hold, yeah? We're not letting them just run free and doing whatever they want. Then we wouldn't be the shepherd with the rod. Yeah. So cute. Hello, yes.
Something I've struggled to understand with this, not with your presentation, it's something I've been thinking about.
Sure, yeah, I'm happy for...
So I understand that, like under six, they don't really have the ability to understand consequences. So if you're like punishing them for something, they're just like, that's not really connected well. But then what I don't get is if you then still give consequences and then you see an improvement in compliance, which I agree is not the goal of parenting.
Yep.
But I actually don't understand this. Why is there an improvement in compliance? Yeah.
It's a beautiful word that you've chosen, and I think that's the difference, right, when we're thinking about it. So compliance is one thing, right? Compliance is I just do what you say. That's compliance. And it can, we know, like there's behavioral evidence, like behaviorism came out in the early 1900s, ages ago. And we know that it does play a role in that outward behavior, and particularly things like compliance. I'm just simply doing this because you told me to. And if I don't do it, I know there's going to be something unpleasant happening. So
they have learned cause and effect.
So a little, it depends. It depends where you are at in that developmental pathway. Yeah. And if there's enough fear associated with it, like fear is a huge motivator. So if your consequence is fearful enough, you're actually accessing the amygdala then and that fear response. So their body learns from a threat perspective, not necessarily a cognitive perspective, but from a threat perspective, this thing I'm going to remember really, really well because that ended, I was terrified, you know, with that, what happened after I did that.
So
sometimes it's a fear-based, like it's a red pathway connection rather than a cognitive connection. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Fawning.
Oh, yes, that's the fourth one is fawning. So, yeah, just being really, 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 really good.
Yes.
So that you don't get the scary consequence. Yeah.
In terms of development, it kind of just leads to just that
compliance,
compliance.
Yep.
Really
deep seated. Yeah. And choosing, like, I do this because I value, you know, whatever it is, or I value my connection with my parent. I want to be connected with them, so I'll just, rather than kind of, I'm just doing this to avoid, like, because that was scary last time, and Did that help a little bit? Yeah, it's the compliance, which is not really the deep-seated behaviour. Yeah, like the... Yeah?
Some previous comments, like, in the Old Testament, there's a lot of, God uses consequences a lot, because he wants them to follow him because they love him, he wants to respond from the heart.
Yep.
When they don't, he sends prophets to say, come back to me,
return
to me.
Yep.
He's trying to draw them back.
Yep.
But when they won't come,
yep.
he warns them, there will be consequences, and it's very long suffering, but those consequences come in. So I don't know about under sixes, you've got to have a different mindset, I understand that.
Yes.
But I think the consequences are helpful when they do. They cannot self-discipline. And the parent's role is to help them, and they do not have the cognitive stuff to actually do a self-discipline. Like, you can't, if it's something dangerous, like running on the road or whatever, if there's a consequence that, well, you won't be able to use your bike if you get to go on the road. You can only use it in the yard. Now, they mightn't like that. But the consequence of that is they learn to control themselves a bit better, because otherwise if they get the one, they'd use the bike at all. So they're learning to control emotions before Well, I guess my society frightens me because I'm older and I see that there's no consequences, and I see the lack of a consequence in society. And I know a lot of you young ones think that's just rubbish, but I can tell you it's not rubbish. It's a real fact, and that's why, you know, and when we do things in response with our heart to God, we've got a good consequence, and it's a good consequence. But if I let my relationship with the Lord go day by day and don't do that, then there's going to be a consequence. I won't feel His blessing, I won't feel His nearness. That's not just out of fear, but there is, we're told, we're just learning in the first session, you know, we need to fear God, not because, or we need to fear the water, not because it's a terrible thing, but because the water is very powerful, the line is very powerful. We need to know our God is very powerful.
He is.
And there are consequences when we don't listen. And the best consequence is the one that the result of, like, if we're going to tidy this room up here, now we'll all get in to do it, and they don't do it. Once we tidy the room, we'll be able to go and do such and such. Well, if they don't do it, the consequence, now we're not going to be able to go and do this. It's not like a big stick punishment, but no. Saying this will be the consequence. If we don't get our little jobs done, then we won't have the time to do such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the consequence, I think, that follows logically, not to come in and smack it because you put your toys away, but a logical one.
Yeah, and as I said, it's connection over consequence when we're under six, which is what this is about. So obviously the Israelites, they were adults, whole different scenario. And I'm not saying that consequences are never at play. Like, there was, since the 1900s, we've been doing heaps of research into rewards and consequences. And it's a component of how we, you know, can shape behavior. It's a component of it, but it's not the full picture. So since the 1900s, we've kind of learnt a little bit more about human behavior and the complexities of that. And consequences is definitely a part of that. So I'm not saying never, ever touch it, never go there, but it's one part of a bigger picture.
I guess I'm thinking about schools too. This is not what we're doing here, but schools, there's very little consequence in schools. And teachers are resigning because it's just so difficult to try and teach. There's no consequence.
That's again a really super complicated space, which is more than just consequences. Yeah, that's beautiful. I'm just aware that there was other people that had questions, but if you want to stay back afterwards, I'm happy to chat more, but I'll just move on if that's all right. Thank you. You had another question, was that right? Yeah.
Related. Just curious what your familiarity with, you know, Gary and Marie Ezzo and their work.
It's not ringing a bell. Can you give me a short note? Sorry. I'll have to go look them up. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of people out there. Was there another one, I think?
A couple of things. I was just thinking, I guess, making sure you connect emotionally first and then the consequence. Would that be sort of a good way to wrap it up when you're trying to deal with when you're responding to a young child who's control or whatever.
Yeah.
So I was also curious, do you think, what roughly age, maybe this is individual, but when they actually do choose to do something, is there an age or...
that you start to see that happening? Yeah.
Would you say like six and up, or would it be...
So six and up is where that frontal lobe is starting to develop. So they're starting to understand the cause and effect stuff, that if I do this then, and all of that sort of, so they're starting to be able to verbal reason. And did you have another question?
Just a comment, more than anything.
Yeah.
I'm a bit older than a few of them. And I guess it's hard to look around in society. We live in a very woke world, right? And disciplining kids has been something that for the last 15, 20 years has been really, really frowned on. In fact, you can't do it in public.
Mm.
Yet you see in public behaviour that you would have never seen 20, 30 years.
It's so interesting.
It's chronic and it's sickening, but it's really, really hard for parents trying to be something that I'm pretty sure God didn't want them to be. Tolerating kids' behaviour that... one swift smack might pretty well.
You would think so, but.
Well, we are looking at examples. I mean, I often think, I know I'm pushing my hobby horse, but we often think, did my generation turn out that bad that you have to change? I didn't get the smack much.
We have some at the, we do have some at the back. Thing is, there's an emotional, like, I know.
Because I feel so frustrated that the younger generation will not take any notice whatsoever.
All the young people I'm working with, I'm actually really excited about the next generation. We get a lot of bad press in the media. When you actually look at the stats, youth crime is not going up. It's just a big hullabaloo that, you know, the media is going on. Whereas, you know, the young...
It's just very sad. I've worked with young mums in our church, and they are tremendous. I can see God working in their lives.
100%.
Working with them, with their children, they're teaching their children in all those things you're saying. But out there in the society, there's all this pressure. Oh, no, you mustn't do that. There's all this new thinking. That's just what you should be doing with the children. I've got a couple of mums that, no, we can't do that. We've got to do this. And they're really turning their back on what God says and taking on board all this new stuff.
Yeah, well, it's something that I've done through all my studies. Like, it's something that I think a lot about. And I wouldn't be talking about this if I didn't believe it is connected biblically.
I'm happy to give a short, testimony to say that a lot of what you said is really quite true. Like, I've got 5 children, one's 18, one's 5, a bit younger.
Yeah, wow.
And I've parented quite differently with my last few.
Yeah.
And followed a lot more of these processes compared to my early ones.
Yeah.
And I think what you said about the compliance versus the just that genuine.
Yep.
Like, and I've also worked on changing the way I parent my teenagers, you know, as a response. So it's not to say I see, but I believe that we can love our kids.
Yeah.
And we can, I just recall I had a little boy who would kick the balls.
Yes.
He was so dysregulated. And,
yes.
And he had a really tough first few years of life.
Wow.
And I would just invite him to come to me, and he gradually learnt to come to me.
Yes.
He's now a beautiful 6-year-old. But for a little while, I was quite worried about him.
Yes.
We didn't use the tough approach. We took the, I'm here.
Yep.
I want you to come. I want you to come to me. I want you to
connect.
Know that we can compare.
Yeah, I can help you with this, right? I'm here.
And I can see a really big difference in just his general, I guess he's a much less fearful child.
Yeah.
He comes to us a lot more readily.
Yeah.
And we had to work on repairing some of that stuff with our teenagers that I think we use a little bit too much. We never use heaps of rod, but I think we just used a lot of really, we were very rigid. And if I could go back, I would do it all the same.
Thank you.
So just a testimony.
Thank you for sharing. It is. Sure. Any other questions, comments, feedback? Yes.
I appreciate that we do know a bit more now than we did, and I guess 15, 20 years ago, I don't think we were all aware of.
No, absolutely.
That we do know today.
Yep.
And so I think it does go both ways. I think, and your emphasis on these principles, particularly with kids under 6.
Yes.
Sometimes we can just.
It's very different. Forget. Those under 6 is it's a very different kettle of fish, right? Yeah.
Have that capability.
Yeah.
And we might have memories of how we were parented, but that's
yep.
when we were 10 or 11 or 12.
Yeah.
I've got a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Two.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Different expectations.
Just
yeah.
Remember that developmentally, I think we understand the brain more than we did.
Absolutely. It's phenomenal what we're learning. Yeah.
Just on that as well, I think back to I knew very much as a kid, even under 6, how I was needed to behave.
Yes.
That was it.
Yes.
And still, to this day, I am so compliant to my parents. And
yes. Yeah.
Out of fear.
Yeah.
I love my parents a bit.
Of course.
Oh no, I don't want to upset them by doing the wrong thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's still.
Yep. We have such a massive responsibility.
Yes.
We are we are emulating the character of God.
Yes. Yes.
To these kids as parents.
Yes.
And we don't understand God's character, then how
do we model that? Yeah, and I like that comment because I'm the same. Like, I reflect a lot. Being a psychologist, wow, it's like so much self-work. It's a bit intense sometimes, but definitely the same. Like, I grew up as perfect. You know, I did all the things. I've gotten to the stage at 40 when I'm like, who even am I? I've spent so much time making everybody happy and having this facade because that's how I was brought up and parented. And I love, like, same, I love my parents deeply, but I feel like I don't know who I am. I'm just figuring out at 40, 42 now, and almost 43, who even am I before Christ, you know? And that's something I'm only just, so I think that's another gift we can give to our kids when we understand where they're at. You know, it's really supporting who they are in Christ. And yeah, sorry, I just started, went off on a tangent.
Super practical question. Yeah. We've got a 2-year-old who doesn't give a stuff about doing
anything. No, of course they don't. They're two, yeah.
Before the terrace.
Yeah.
Any tips on like emotionally regulating or like, yeah, how to teach
yeah.
them how to regulate?
How to regulate.
Especially a 2-year-old as opposed to a 6-year-old.
It is fun. So that what I was talking about before, with that incident that happened with my little person and when I was regulating and he started coming down, he was probably around 18 months too at that time when that happened, maybe even younger. So he delightfully started having very intense tantrums at 18 months of age and they just have not stopped. And that's how I worked with him. So I found going through all different things that the most effective way to help bring his system down was when I did regulation work myself. So what works... Yeah, with him there in the room. So what works for me is the breathing, and I love rocking. People do different things, but this has been shown again in the research. This is tapping into your green pathway. When we do this, it taps into your green pathway. When we breathe out, it taps into our green pathway. When we breathe in, we're more into our red. So if you just really a nice long out breath, that's actually tapping into our green pathway. And it's beautiful the way our nervous systems are actually connected. Like, we don't think about this enough, but God's actually created us to be connected to other humans, picking up on all these unconscious verbal kind of cues and stuff, which is like blows my mind. It's amazing. So basically your kid is very, particularly with children, like that blew me away as well, like how dysregulated I got when my kid was dysregulated. I'm like, wow, what is this? And it's a way that God has made sure parents look after their kids, right? Like that's, he's put that in place. So the best thing I can do is use what God's given me in order to bring my system down, and then your little person will follow. Took me ages to learn this. Like, it took until my second child at 2 before it clicked. I had that moment and I was like, oh, this is when I talk about co-regulation. Like, this is what it means. Like, I had that real experiential kind of, yeah, moment. So definitely anything you can do to kind of regulate. And I find if I use less words, my little person kind of comes down quicker as well. So when I try and talk, it's already too much, already really overwhelmed. Sometimes with him, I get him to be physical to kind of release the energy of the red pathway. So that can be another idea. So he'll run up and give me a bear hug. So I'm like, you know, so he'll run and bam and give me this big hug, or he'll push. I'll push. He thinks that's hilarious because he's stronger than me. So anything to really release the energy of the red pathway can help as well. So jumping, stomping, you know, fist growling, you know, anything that's not harming you or anyone else, but that can release that energy of the red pathway, because that's what it's there for. So we've got a lot of energy to keep us safe. So if you, any way to release the big energy, can some kids respond to that, some kids don't. Just depends where they're at. So I don't know if that's sort of helpful. It can be really hard. Dr. Ross Green has written a book called The Explosive Child. That's very, very good and quite helpful in kids that are on the red pathway a lot. I've had that in my thing to read for ages. I've done some training with him, but that is a book, The Explosive Child. If you do have a child on the red pathway a lot, he's got lots of good ideas.
There's another Robin Goble.
Okay.
She talks about big baffling behaviours.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Those kids on the red pathway a lot. Yeah, that's my second child. My eldest is more of a blue pathway. He'll go to the withdrawal. Cool. Sorry, I know I've gone probably way... Yes, we're 3:15, so I'm happy to hang around if anyone does want to touch base. But thank you for listening and your questions. And, yeah, that was really lovely.
Well, thank you, Rebecca. Look, thanks for sharing your learning and your life experience. I think we've all... we all have a learning experience when we have kids or grandkids.
Yes.
We've got things to learn.
Yes.
And, you know, God doesn't give them to us for nothing. He wants to teach us that as well. So thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you.
And that's yours on behalf of MTCC.
Thank you so much.
Let's just pray.
Thank you. That would be good.
Heavenly Father, you have made each one of us special and different. You've given us different life experiences. And Lord, we just ask that you would guide us with your wisdom, that we might raise children who honour you and love you from their hearts. Lord, not that we would force them into a place where they would feel compelled to be something that they're not, but Lord, that you would change their real hearts, that they might be your people, that they would grow to be men and women who will honour you and serve you all their days and raise their own kids in an honouring way as well. We ask this in your name, Lord. Amen.
Amen.